I'm glad you've come back for her, said the king vaguely. She's your sister, you know. Half-sister, that is. Sometimes I wish I'd married her mother, but you see, she wasn't royal. Very bright woman, her mother. Tepic listened hard. There it was again. A faint breathing noise, only heard at all because of the deep silence of the night. He worked his way to the back of the room, listened again, and lifted the lid of the case. Petrucci was curled up on the bottom, fast asleep, with her head on her arm. He leaned the lid carefully against the wall and touched her hair. She muttered something in her sleep and settled into a more comfortable position. I think you'd better wake up, he whispered. She changed position again and muttered something like... Tepic hesitated. Neither his tutors nor Dios had prepared him for this. He knew at least 70 different ways of killing a sleeping person, but none to wake them up first. He prodded her in what looked like the least embarrassing area of her skin. She opened her eyes. Oh, she said, it's you, and she yawned. I've come to take you away, said Tepic. You've been asleep all day. I heard someone talking, she said, stretching in a fashion that made Tepic look away hurriedly. It was that priest, the one with the face like a bald eagle. He's really horrible. He is, isn't he? Agreed Tepic, intensely relieved to hear it said. So I just kept quiet, and there was the king, the new king. Oh, he was down here, was he? Said Tepic weakly. The bitterness in her voice was like a No. 4 stabbing knife in his heart. All the girls say he's really weird, she added, as he helped her out of the case. You can't touch me, you know, I'm not made of china. He steadied her arm, feeling in sore need of a cold bath and a quick run round the rooftops. You're an assassin, aren't you? She went on. I remembered that after you'd gone an assassin from foreign parts. All that black. Have you come to kill the king? I wish I could, said Tepic. He's really beginning to get on my nerves. Look, could you take your bangles off? Why? They make such a noise when you walk. Even Petrucci's earrings appeared to chime the hours when she moved her head. I don't want to, she said. I'd feel naked without them. You're nearly naked with them, hissed Tepic. Please. She can play the dulcimer, said the ghost of Tepicheim on the 27th, apropos of nothing much. Not very well, mind you. She's up to page 5 of Little Pieces for Tiny Fingers. Tepic crept to the passage leading out of the embalming room and listened hard. Silence ruled in the palace, broken only by heavy breathing and the occasional clink behind him as Petrucci stripped herself of her jewellery. He crept back. Please hurry up, he said. We haven't got a lot of... Petrucci was crying. Said Tepic. Some of these were presents from my granny, sniffed Petrucci. The old king gave me some, too. These earrings have been in my family for ever such a long time. How would you like it if you had to do it? You see... "'Jewelry isn't just something she wears,' said the ghost of Tepicheim on the 27th. "'It's a part of who she is.' "'My word,' he added to himself, "'that's probably an insight. "'Why is it so much easier to think when you're dead?' "'I don't wear any,' said Tepic. "'Well, you've got all those daggers and things. "'Well, I need them to do my job. "'Well, then.' Look, you don't have to leave them here. You can put them in my pouch, he said. But we must be going, please. Goodbye, said the ghost, sadly, watching them sneak out to the courtyard. He floated back to his corpse, who wasn't the best of company. The breeze was stronger when they reached the roof. It was hotter, too, and dry. Across the river, one or two of the older pyramids were already sending up their flares, but they were weak and looked wrong.
I feel itchy, said Petrucci. What's wrong?
It feels like we're in for a thunderstorm, said Tepic, staring across the river at the Great Pyramid. Its blackness had intensified, so that it was a triangle of deeper darkness in the night. Figures were running around its base like lunatics watching their asylum burn.
What's a thunderstorm?
Very hard to describe, he said in a preoccupied voice. Can you see what they're doing over there? Petrucci squinted across the river.
They're very busy, she said.
Looks more like panic to me. A few more pyramids flared, but instead of roaring straight up, the flames flickered and lashed backwards and forwards, driven by intangible winds. Tepic shook himself. Come on, he said. Let's get you away from here.
I said we should have kept it this evening, shouted Pataclusp 2B, above the screaming of the pyramid. I can't float it up now. The turbulence up there must be terrific.
The ice of day was boiling off the black marble, which was already warm to the touch. He stared distractedly at the capstone on its cradle, and then at his brother, who was still in his nightshirt.
Where's father? He said.
I sent one of us to go and wake him up, said 2A.
Who?
One of you, actually.
Oh.
2B stared again at the capstone.
Well, it's not that heavy, he said. Two of us could manhandle it up there.
He gave his brother an inquiring look.
You must be mad. Send some of the men to do it.
They've all run away.
Downriver, another pyramid tried to flare, sputtered, and then ejected a screaming, ragged flame that arched across the sky and grounded near the top of the Great Pyramid itself.
It's interfering with the others now, shouted 2B. Come on, we've got to flare it off. It's the only way.
About a third of the way up the pyramid's flanks, a crackling blue zigzag arced out and struck itself on a stone sphinx. The air above it boiled. The two brothers slung the stone between them and staggered to the scaffolding, while the dust around them whirled into strange shapes.
Can you hear something? Said 2B, as they stumbled onto the first platform.
What, you mean the fabric of time and space being put through the ringer? Said 2A.
The architect gave his brother a look of faint admiration. It was an unusual remark for an accountant. Then his face returned to its previous look of faint terror.
No, not that, he said.
Well, the sound of the very air itself being subjected to horrible tortures.
No, not that either, said 2B, vaguely annoyed. I mean the creaking noise.
Three more pyramids struck their discharges, which fizzled through the roiling clouds overhead and poured into the black marble above them.
Can't hear anything like that, said 2A.
I think it's coming from the pyramid.
Well, you can put your ear against it if you like, but I'm not going to.
The scaffolding swayed in the storm as they eased their way up another ladder, the heavy capstan rocking between them.
I said we shouldn't do it,
muttered the accountant as the stone slid gently onto his toes.
We shouldn't have built this.
Just shut up and lift your end, will you?
And so, one rocking ladder after another, the brothers Pataclusp eased their bickering way up the flanks of the Great Pyramid, while the lesser tombs along the Dajjal fired one after another, and the sky streamed with lines of sizzling time. It was around about this point that the greatest mathematician in the world, lying in cosy flatulence in his stall below the palace, stopped chewing the cud and realized that something very wrong was happening to numbers, all the numbers. The camel looked along its nose at Tepic. Its expression made it clear that of all the riders in all the world, it would least like to ride it. He was right at the top of the list. However, camels look like that at everyone. Camels have a very democratic approach to the human race. They hate every member of it, without making any distinction for rank or creed. This one appeared to be chewing soap. Tepic looked distractedly down the shadowy length of the royal stables, which had once contained 100 camels. He'd have given the world for a horse and a moderately sized continent for a pony, but the stables now held only a handful of rotting war chariots, relics of past glories, an elderly elephant whose presence was a bit of a mystery, and this camel. It looked an extremely inefficient animal. It was going threadbare at the knees.
Well, this is it, he said to Petracci. I don't dare try the river during the night. I could try and get you over the border.
Is that saddle on right? Said Petracci. It looks awfully funny.
It's on an awfully odd creature, said Tepic. How do we climb onto it?
I've seen the camel drivers at work, she replied. I think they just hit them very hard with a big stick.
The camel knelt down and gave her a smug look. Tepic shrugged, pulled open the doors to the outside world, and stared into the face of 5 guards. He backed away. They advanced. 3 of them were holding the heavy Dajjal bows, which could propel an arrow through a door or turn a charging hippo into 3 tons of mobile kebab. The guards had never had to fire them at a fellow human, but looked as though they were prepared to entertain the idea. The guard captain tapped one of the men on the shoulder and said,
"Go and inform the High Priest."
He glared at Tepic.
"Throw down all your weapons," he said.
"What, all of them?"
"Yes, all of them.
It may take some time, said Tepic cautiously.
And keep your hands where I can see them, the captain added.
We could be up against a real impasse here, Tepic ventured. He looked from one guard to another. He knew a variety of methods of unarmed combat, but they all rather relied on the opponent not being about to fire an arrow straight through you as soon as you moved. But he could probably dive sideways, and once he had the cover of the camel stalls, he could bide his time. And that would leave Petrucci exposed. Besides, he could hardly go around fighting his own guards. That wasn't acceptable behaviour, even for a king. There was a movement behind the guards, and Dios drifted into view, as silent and inevitable as an eclipse of the moon. He was holding a lighted torch, which reflected wild highlights on his bald head.
Ah, he said, the miscreants are captured. Well done,
he nodded to the captain.
Throw them to the crocodiles.
Dios, said Tepic, as two of the guards lowered their bows and bore down on him.
Did you speak?
You know who I am, man. Don't be silly. The high priest raised the torch.
You have the advantage of me, boy, he said, metaphorically speaking.
This is not funny, said Tepic. I order you to tell them who I am.
As you wish. This assassin, said Dios,
and the voice had the cut and sear of a thermic lance,
has killed the king.
I am the king, dammit, said Tepic. How could I kill myself?
We are not stupid, said Dios. These men know the king does not skulk the palace at night or consort with condemned criminals. All that remains for us to find out is how you disposed of the body.
His eyes fixed on Tepic's face, and Tepic realized that the high priest was indeed truly mad. It was the rare kind of madness caused by being yourself for so long that habits of sanity have etched themselves into the brain. I wonder how old he really is, he thought.
These assassins are cunning creatures, said Dios. Have a care of him.
There was a crash beside the priest. Petrucci had tried to throw a camel prod and missed. When everyone looked back, Tepic had vanished. The guards beside him were busy collapsing slowly to the floor, groaning. Dios smiled.
Take the woman, he snapped,
and the captain darted forward and grabbed Petrucci, who hadn't made any attempt to run away. Dios bent down and picked up the prod.
There are more guards outside, he said. I am sure you will realize that. It will be in your interests to step forward.
Why? Said Tepic from the shadows. He fumbled in his boot for his blowpipe.
You will then be thrown to the sacred crocodiles by order of the king, said Dios.
Something to look forward to, eh? Said Tepic, feverishly screwing bits together.
It would certainly be preferable to many alternatives, said Dios.
In the darkness, Tepic ran his fingers over the little coded knobs on the darts. Most of the really spectacular poisons would have evaporated or dissolved into harmlessness by now, but there were a number of lesser potions designed to give their clients nothing more than a good night's sleep. An assassin might have to work his way to an inhumee past a number of alert bodyguards. It was considered impolite to inhume them as well.
You could let us go, said Tepic. I suspect that's what you want, isn't it? For me to go away and never come back. That suits me fine.
Dios hesitated.
You're supposed to say, and let the girl go, he said.
Oh, yes, and that too, said Tepic.
No, I would be failing in my duty to the king, said Dios. Oh, for goodness sake, Dios, you know I am the king. No, I have a very clear picture of the king. You are not the king, said the priest.
Tepic peered over the edge of the camel stall. The camel peered over his shoulder. And then the world went mad. All right, madder. All the pyramids were blazing now, filling the sky with their sooty light as the brothers Pataclusp struggled to the main working platform. 2A collapsed on the planking, wheezing like an elderly bellows. A few feet away, the sloping side was hot to the touch, and there was no doubt in his mind now that the pyramid was creaking like a sailing ship in a gale. He had never paid much attention to the actual mechanics, as opposed to the cost, of pyramid construction, but he was pretty certain that the noise was as wrong as 2 and 2, making 5. His brother reached out to touch the stone, but drew his hand back as small sparks flashed around his fingers.
You can feel the warmth, he said. It's astonishing.
Why?
Heating up a mass like this, I mean, the sheer tonnage.
I don't like it, 2B,
Tu'e quavered. "Let's just leave the stone here, shall we? I'm sure it'll be all right, and in the morning we can send a gang up here, and they'll know exactly what..."
His words were drowned out as another flare crackled across the sky and hit the column of dancing air 50 feet above them. He grabbed part of the scaffolding.
"Sod take this," he said. "I'm off."
"Hang on a minute," said Tubby. "I mean, what is creaking? Stone can't creak."
"The whole bloody scaffolding is moving. Don't be daft."
He stared goggled-eyed at his brother.
"Tell me it's the scaffolding,"
he pleaded.
"No, I'm certain this time. It's coming from inside."
They stared at one another, and then at the rickety ladder leading up to the tip, or to where the tip should be.
"Come on," said Tubby. "It can't flare off. It's trying to find ways of discharging."
There was a sound as loud as the groaning of continents. Tepic felt it. He felt that his skin was several sizes too small. He felt that someone was holding his ears and trying to twist his head off. He saw the guard captain sag to his knees, fighting to get his helmet off, and he leapt the stall. Tried to leap the stall. Everything was wrong, and he landed heavily on a floor that seemed undecided about becoming a wall. He managed to get to his feet and was pulled sideways, dancing awkwardly across the stable to keep his balance. The stables stretched and shrank like a picture in a distorting mirror. He'd gone to see some once in Ankh, the three of them hazarding a half coin each, to visit the transient marvels of Dr. Mooner's travelling take-your-breath-away emporium. But you knew then that it was only twisted glass that was giving you a head like a sausage and legs like footballs. Tepic wished he could be so certain that what was happening around him would allow of such a harmless explanation. You probably need a wobbly glass mirror to make it look normal. He ran on taffy legs towards Petracci and the High Priest, as the world was expanded and squeezed around him, and was momentarily gratified to see the girl squirm in Dios's grip and fetch him a tidy thump on the ear. He moved as though in a dream, with the distances changing as though reality was an elastic thing. Another step sent him cannoning into the pair of them. He grabbed Petracci's arm and staggered back to the camel stall, where the creature was still cudding and watching the scene with the nearest thing a camel will ever get to mild interest, and snatched its halter. No one seemed to be interested in stopping them, as they helped each other through the doorway and out into the mad night.
"It helps if you shut your eyes," said Petracci.
Tepic tried it. It worked. A stretch of courtyard that his eyes told him was a quivering rectangle whose sides twanged like bowstrings became, well, just a courtyard under his feet.
"Gosh, that was clever," he said. "How did you think of that?" "I always shut my eyes when I'm frightened," said Petracci.
"Good plan."
"What's happening?"
"I don't know. I don't want to find out. I think going away from here could be an amazingly sensible idea. How do you make a camel kneel, did you say? I've got any amount of sharp things." The camel, who had a very adequate grasp of human language as it applied to threats, knelt down graciously. They scrambled aboard, and the landscape lurched again as the beast jacked itself back onto its feet. The camel knew perfectly well what was happening. Three stomachs and a digestive system like an industrial distillation plant give you a lot of time for sitting and thinking. It's not for nothing that advanced mathematics tends to be invented in hot countries. It's because of the morphic resonance of all the camels, who have that disdainful expression and famous curled lip as a natural result of an ability to do quadratic equations. It's not generally realized that camels have a natural aptitude for advanced mathematics, particularly where they involve ballistics. This evolved as a survival trait, in the same way as a human's hand and eye coordination, a chameleon's camouflage, and a dolphin's renowned ability to save drowning swimmers if there's any chance that biting them in half might be observed and commented upon adversely by other humans. The fact is that camels are far more intelligent than dolphins. Never trust a species that grins all the time. It's up to something. They are so much brighter that they soon realized that the most prudent thing any intelligent animal can do, if it would prefer its descendants not to spend a lot of time on a slab, with electrodes clamped to their brains, or sticking mines on the bottom of ships, or being patronized rigid by zoologists, is to make bloody certain humans don't find out about it. So they long ago plumped for a lifestyle that, in return for a certain amount of porterage and being prodded with sticks, allowed them adequate food and grooming, and the chance to spit in a human's eye and get away with it. And this particular camel, the result of millions of years of selective evolution to produce a creature that could count the grains of sand it was walking over and close its nostrils at will, and survive under the broiling sun for many days without water, was called You Bastard. And he was, in fact, the greatest mathematician in the world.
"You bastard," was thinking. There seems to be some growing dimensional instability here, swinging from zero to nearly 45 degrees by the look of it. How interesting. I wonder what's causing it. Let V equal 3, let tau equal chi 4, cud 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 cud, let kappa stroke y be an evil-smelling bugger, renowned as the greatest camel mathematician of all time, who invented a math of eight-dimensional space while lying down with his nostrils closed in a violent sandstorm. Differential tensor domain with four imaginary spin coefficients. Petrucci hit him across the head with her sandal. "Come on, get a move on!" she yelled. "You bastard," thought. Therefore, H to the enabling power equals V over S, cud cud cud. Thus, in hypersyllogic notation, Tepic looked behind them. The strange distortions in the landscape seemed to be settling down, and Dios was striding out of the palace, and had actually managed to find several guards whose fear of disobedience overcame the terror of the mysteriously distorted world. You bastard stood stoically chewing, cud, 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 which gives us an interesting shortening oscillation. What would be the period of this? Let period equal X, cud, 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 let T equal time, let initial period... Petrucci bounced up and down on his neck and kicked hard with her heels, an action which would have caused any anthropoid male to howl and bang his head against the wall.
It won't move! Can't you hit it?
Tepic brought his hand down as hard as he could on you bastard's hide, raising a cloud of dust and deadening every nerve in his fingers. It was like hitting a large sackful of coat hangers.
Come on, he muttered.
Dios raised a hand.
Halt in the name of the king, he shouted.
An arrow thudded into you bastard's hump.
Equals 6.3 recurring, reduce, that gives us, ouch, 314 seconds.
You bastard turned his long neck around. His great hairy eyebrows made accusing curves as his yellow eyes narrowed and took a fix on the high priest. And he put aside the interesting problem for a moment and dredged up the familiar ancient maths that his race had perfected long ago. Let range equal 41 feet, let wind speed equal 2, vector 1.8, cud, let glutinosity equal 7.
Tepic drew a throwing knife.
Dios took a deep breath. He's going to order them to fire on us, Tepic thought. In my own name, in my own kingdom, I'm going to be shot.
Angle 2.5, cud, fire.
It was a magnificent volley. The gob of cud had commendable lift and spin, and hit with a sound like half a pound of semi-digested grass hitting someone in the face. There was nothing else it could sound like. The silence that followed was by way of being a standing ovation. The landscape began to distort again. This was clearly not a place to linger. You bastard looked down at his front legs.
Let legs equal 4.
He lumbered into a run. Camels apparently have more knees than any other creature, and you bastard ran like a steam engine, with lots of extraneous movement at right angles to the direction of motion, accompanied by a thunderous barrage of digestive noises.
"Bloody stupid animal!" muttered Petrucci as they jolted away from the palace. "But it looks like it finally got the idea." Gauge invariant, repetition rate of 3.5 over Z. What's she talking about? Bloody stupid lives over in Tussaud.
Though they swung through the air as though jointed with bad elastic, you bastard's legs covered a lot of ground, and already they were bouncing through the sleeping, packed earth streets of the city.
"It's starting again, isn't it?" said Petrucci. "I'm going to shut my eyes."
Tepic nodded. The fire-brick-hot houses around them were doing their slow-motion mirror dance again, and the road was rising and falling in a way that solid land had no right to adopt.
"It's like the sea," he said. "I can't see anything," said Petrucci firmly. "I mean the sea, the ocean, you know, waves. I've heard about it. Is anyone chasing us?"
Tepic turned in the saddle.
"Not that I can make out," he said. "It looks as..."
From here he could see past the long, low bulk of the palace, and across the river to the Great Pyramid itself. It was almost hidden in dark clouds, but what he could see of it was definitely wrong. He knew it had four sides, and he could see all eight of them. It seemed to be moving in and out of focus, which he felt instinctively was a dangerous thing for several million tons of rock to do. He felt a pressing urge to be a long way away from it,
Even a dumb creature like the camel seemed to have the same idea. You Bastard was thinking, delta squared, thus, dimensional pressure K will result in a 90-degree transformation in chi brackets 6 times PU brackets T for a K bundle of any three invariables, or 4 minutes plus or minus 10 seconds. The camel looked down at the great pads of his feet. Let speed equal gallop. How did you make it do that? Said Tepic.
I didn't. It's doing it by itself. Hang on.
This wasn't easy. Tepic had saddled the camel, but neglected the harness. Petrucci had handfuls of camel hair to hang on to. All he had was handfuls of Petrucci. No matter where he tried to put his hands, they encountered warm, yielding flesh. Nothing in his long education had prepared him for this, whereas everything in Petrucci's obviously had. Her long hair whipped his face and smelled beguilingly of rare perfume, an effect achieved by distilling the testicles of a small tree-dwelling species of bear with the vomit of a whale, and adding a handful of rose petals. Tepic would probably have felt no better for knowing this.
"Are you all right?"
he shouted above the wind.
"I'm hanging on with my knees."
"That must be very hard."
"You get special training."
Camels gallop by throwing their feet as far away from them as possible, and then running to keep up. Knee joints clicking like chilly castanets, You Bastard thrashed up the sloping road out of the valley and windmilled along the narrow gorge that led under towering limestone cliffs to the high desert beyond. And behind them, tormented beyond measure by the inexorable tide of geometry, unable to discharge its burden of time, the great pyramid screamed, lifted itself off its base, and its bulk, swishing through the air as unstoppably as something completely unstoppable, ground around precisely 90 degrees and did something perverted to the fabric of time and space. You Bastard sped along the gorge, his neck stretched out to its full extent, his mighty nostrils flaring like jet intakes.
"It's terrified,"
Petrucci yelled. "Animals always know about this sort of thing." "What sort of thing?"
"Forest fires and things. We haven't got any trees. Well, floods and things. They've got some strange natural instinct."
Phi 1700 bracket U over V lateral EV equals a tranche of 7 to 12. The sound hit them. It was as silent as a dandelion clock striking midnight, but it had pressure. It rolled over them, suffocating as velvet, nauseating as a battered saveloy, and was gone. You Bastard slowed to a walk, a complicated procedure that involved precise instructions to each leg in turn. There was a feeling of release, a sense of stress withdrawn. You Bastard stopped. In the pre-dawn glow, he'd spotted a clump of thorned cephasia bushes growing in the rocks by the track. Angle left, times equals 37 point Y equals 19 point Z equals 43, bite. Peace descended. There was no sound except for the eructations of the camel's digestive tract and the distant warbling of a desert owl. Petrucci slid off her perch and landed awkwardly.
"My bottom," she announced, to the desert in general, "is one huge blister."
Tepic jumped down and half ran, half staggered up the scree by the roadside, then jogged across the cracked limestone plateau until he could get a good look at the valley. It wasn't there anymore. It was still dark when Dill, the master embalmer, woke up, his body twanging with the sensation that something was wrong. He slipped out of bed, dressed hurriedly, and pulled aside the curtain that did duty as a door. The night was soft and velvety. Behind the chirrup of insects, there was another sound, a frying noise, a faint sizzling on the edge of hearing. Perhaps that was what had woken him up. The air was warm and damp, curls of mist rose from the river, and the pyramids weren't flaring. He'd grown up in this house. It had been in the family of the master embalmers for thousands of years, and he'd seen the pyramids flare so often that he didn't notice them, any more than he noticed his own breathing. But now they were dark and silent, and the silence cried out and the darkness glared. But that wasn't the worst part. As his horrified eyes stared up at the empty sky over the necropolis, they saw the stars and what the stars were stuck to. Dill was terrified. And then, when he had time to think about it, he was ashamed of himself. After all, he thought, it's what I've always been told is there. It stands to reason. I'm just seeing it properly for the first time. There. Does that make me feel any better? No. He turned and ran down the street, sandals flapping, until he reached the house that held Gurn and his numerous family. He dragged the protesting apprentice from the communal sleeping mat
and pulled him into the street, turned his face to the sky and hissed,
"Tell me what you can see."
Gurn squinted.
"I can see the stars, master," he said.
"What are they on, boy?"
Gurn relaxed slightly.
"That's easy, master. Everyone knows the stars are on the body of the goddess Nept, who arches herself from... Oh, bloody hell!"
"You can see her too?"
"Oh, mummy!"
whispered Gurn and slid to his knees. Dil nodded. He was a religious man. It was a great comfort knowing that the gods were there. It was knowing they were here. That was the terrible part. Because the body of a woman arched over the heavens, faintly blue, faintly shadowy in the light of the watery stars. She was enormous. Her statistics interstellar. The shadow between her galactic breasts was a dark nebula, the curve of her stomach a vast wash of glowing gas, her navel the seeding dark incandescence in which new stars were being born. She wasn't supporting the sky, she was the sky. Her huge, sad face, upside down on the turnwise horizon, stared directly at Dil. And Dil was realizing that there are few things that so shake belief as seeing, clearly and precisely, the object of that belief. Seeing, contrary to popular wisdom, isn't believing. It's where belief stops, because it isn't needed anymore.
"Oh, sod," moaned Gurn.
Dil struck him across the arm.
"Stop that," he said, "and come with me."
"Oh, master, whatever shall we do?"
Dil looked around the sleeping city. He hadn't the faintest idea.
"We'll go to the palace," he said firmly. "It's probably a trick of the dark. Anyway, the sun will be up presently."
He strode off, wishing he could change places with Gurn and show just a hint of gibbering terror. The apprentice followed him at a sort of galloping creep.
"I can see the shadows against the stars, master. Can you see them, master? Around the edge of the world, master."
"Just mists, boy," said Dil,
resolutely keeping his eyes fixed in front of him and maintaining a dignified posture as appropriate to the keeper of the left-hand door of the Natron Lodge and holder of several medals for needlework.
"There," he said. "See, Gurn, the sun is coming up."
They stood and watched it. Then Gurn whimpered very quietly. Rising up the sky very slowly was a great flaming ball, and it was being pushed by a dung beetle bigger than worlds.